Welcome to Class Act, Updates in Education Law. I'm Miriam.
I'm Lisa.
We're attorneys at Walter Haverfield in Cleveland. We practice school law. Every few weeks we get together, we talk about the most recent legal developments in education relevant to school boards, administrators, teachers, just anybody who works in education.
Yeah, and if you've been listening to our podcast for a while, you've noticed that we have a change in our name. We're really excited. The new name is Class Act. Same great podcast, just a new fun name.
All right, so today let's continue talking about discipline. Last time we talked about discipline protections for all students, general education and special education students, notice and hearing and so on. And today we're going to talk a little bit more about special education kids and the protections that they are entitled to. Today we'll also talk a little bit about some of the problems that school districts face in the initial steps. Super exciting. Like last time, today we have Christina Peer with us, a partner at Walter Haverfield. She frequently advises school boards on discipline issues, and we're very lucky to have her.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Christina.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be back with you guys.
All right, so who's entitled to these protections? Which kids are protected by the special education regulations that we're going to go into? First of all, students who are protected by the IDEA and Section 504, we've reviewed those before. In essence, kids who have an IEP or a Section 504 plan will be entitled to these protections, will have the protection of the 10-day rule and the manifestation determination that we'll talk about a little bit later on.
And we also have another group of those that are suspected of having a disability and being eligible under one of these laws as well.
So not only are the students with IEPs and Section 504 plans protected, but the law also protects kids for whom the process has been started but has not yet been completed. So if a parent expressed concerns in writing, or if a parent asked for an evaluation, or if a teacher expressed a concern about a pattern of behavior to a director or administrator, in any one of those three situations, the law considers that child protected because the process has been started. And maybe that child has a disability. Maybe that child needs special education or is protected by Section 504. And in that case, we want to be safe, rather safe than sorry, and give them these protections. You know, just one thing I just want to ask about. This comes up a lot, Christina and Lisa. I'm sure you see this. We'll have a child who has never been identified, never anything about special education, parents never said anything about disability, teachers, nothing. Then there's a problem. Then the child gets in trouble. And now the parents are all over it. Our child has special education needs. Our child has a disability. What are you doing?
You can't suspend them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So actually, yes, you can.
Right.
So how do the districts handle that? What's something that you've seen?
So I guess it just depends on the situation. You know, like you said, if we're in any of those three situations that we've had before where the process has actually started, that's a little bit different than a situation where literally, I mean, I've seen this happen. Literally, we are at the expulsion hearing, right?
Yep.
For
yep.
the
yep.
child, right?
Yeah,
so we're in the middle of the hearing. And all of a sudden, the parent whips out this diagnosis from the doctor and it says, Johnny has ADHD and should have an IEP. And everyone is like, okay, so first time we're hearing about that, maybe would have been nice if you'd told us before. So then it puts the district in a really, really hard situation. You know, typically speaking, what a school district will do in that situation, they'll say, all right, because we didn't have this information and nobody suspected a disability at the time that little Johnny engaged in the misconduct, you know, whatever it is that's brought us to the table for expulsion, you know, we're going to go ahead with our regular education discipline procedure. And then we're also going to look at whether we need to initiate a special education evaluation. But we have to do that thinking about and doing an evaluation in an expedited manner. So the district can't take as long as it usually would. You know, so typically you could take 30 days to make a decision as to whether or not you're going to evaluate, and then you would have another 60 days to actually do the evaluation. It has to be much, much, much faster than that.
And almost simultaneous to the discipline.
Exactly. You know, so I think the thing that people don't think about a lot is that The regular ed discipline procedures and protections that we talked about in our last episode really run simultaneously, kind of on parallel tracks, if you will, with the special education procedures and protections. And you've got to make sure you're doing all of the steps in both, or you're going to have a problem that will probably lead to not being able to discipline the students.
Right. So what does expedited mean? Is there a time frame?
No. It kind of sounds like a flip answer, right? But I'm being completely serious. The law does not tell you what expedited means.
Well, we can say that it does not mean taking your 30 and 60 days.
Correct. It is less time than that. You know, really, when people look at it, like if a parent were to file a due process complaint or use any of their other IDEA procedural protections, it's a reasonableness standard, like a reasonable person, if you will. You know, so would a reasonable person looking at this think that you moved as quickly as it was practical for you to move under those circumstances, you know, whatever they happen to be?
Right. So something to keep in mind, too. So the student might be out for a suspension or expulsion. That doesn't mean you sit and wait till they're back in the school setting to
Correct.
Do any assessment or anything like that. That is definitely going to fall in the unreasonable
that
side.
That is absolutely what you don't want to do, right?
So you want to get right on that. You want to jump on that right away.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that people tell me from time to time, they're like, oh, well, my school psychologist is just so busy. He or she has an entire list of kids already lined up for an evaluation. So this kid has to go to the back of the line.
Nope.
No. This kid gets like a free pass to the front of the line, whatever you want to call it. They've got to be expedited, even if everybody's really busy, even if you have to bring in a different school psychologist, you know, to take some of the weight off, because legally nobody cares that everybody's busy. I hate to say that, but it's just the truth.
And that's the situation again. That's a situation where the discipline has already been imposed and the parent then brings up the disability issue for the very first time.
Right, so it's right. brand new.
Yeah, it's totally different if you're already in the process and, you know, maybe the parents already brought up the disability and you're already like halfway through doing an evaluation, say under IDEA, you know, at that point, you know, it's a different situation. You're still going to need to finish the evaluation in an expedited manner. But you're not going to be able to simply go forward and impose the discipline like the student was just a regular education student. So you're probably going to have to put your regular education discipline process on hold a little bit while you finish up the evaluation and then look at doing a manifestation determination, which we'll talk about a little bit later, and going through all those other processes.
Right. So for these students who are already IDEA eligible or already 504 eligible or are already suspected and in the process, the protections and procedures we're going to talk about, that's the core group that we're talking about.
Exactly. For those protections that you already have in place.
So for these protections to kick in, you heard us mention 10-day rule earlier. This is kind of the gold standard red flag for when you need to kick in to high gear. And if you didn't listen to our prior episode about the protections for general education students, you'll want to listen to that too, because those are all still going to apply. This is going to just be on top of that.
Absolutely.
So the 10-day rule, just to give you kind of an overview of that, we have a student with special education needs. They're in a specific placement with their specially designed instruction happening. So as soon as they are pulled out of those services for a suspension or expulsion, we start counting days. So basically, you have 10 days in a school year that a child with a disability can be disciplined in the same manner as regular education students before we start kicking in these special protections.
Right. And that's because a child with an IEP or a Section 504 plan, there's a specific placement where that happens, where the specially designed instruction occurs. And that's part of an IEP. That's the child's least restrictive environment. And if you are changing that placement, you need to have this conversation. So changing that placement includes 10 days out. So if the child is out 10 days, the law considers that as a change of placement.
For any day over day 10, right? So when we get to 11, so we've got, essentially, you've got what I like to call your 10 free days. You know, those are the days where you don't have to do any additional special education procedural protections. But when you get to day 11, you're going to need to start looking at, all right, is this a change of placement? I'm going to be honest with you folks. The answer is probably yes. You know, even Even if you try to say, well, it's not the same pattern of behavior, it's different things, it's different issues. If it were me, I wouldn't want to take that risk and count on a hearing officer not seeing it necessarily as a pattern of behavior.
Err on the side of caution.
Right. Yep. So there is a little bit of a caveat to these being free days. If it constitutes a pattern of behavior, it's not necessarily you have all the days. You need to be addressing it if we have a continued behavior that's repeating and causing the same problem. So you might be needing to look at doing like a functional behavior assessment or something to see why this kid keeps getting in trouble for the same thing over and over.
Yeah, I guess it kind of depends. Like I look at the free days and I think of them as these are days when I don't have to do a manifestation determination or look at whether the conduct was related to the student's disability. But I see what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. You know, if you have a student, even if they haven't been suspended, you know, for 10 whole days yet, but they keep engaging in that same kind of misconduct, just from an educational standpoint, you're going to want to look at it and say, okay, wait a minute, is there something different we need to be doing? Because they keep engaging in the same kind of behaviors.
Right. So basically, don't just ignore it until you get to day 11 to address it for the child's needs.
And this is not just us in our conversation. I read an interesting letter from the Office for Civil Rights recently that specifically called out districts on the 10 free days. So they don't like that word, free days. And what they specifically want, of course, the Office for Civil Rights, they specifically want you to take that time to consider what else the child could need or what else what else the school district can do to resolve the situation, prevent it from happening.
Right. So it's going to be where you're going to need to keep your IEP team informed of if the student's being disciplined so that that team that is making a lot of these decisions has the relevant information to discuss.
Sure. And that really is best practice. You know, when you're thinking about it, why would you just let a student over and over and over again, you know, a student with a disability, just keep engaging in this misconduct and keep ending up in discipline situations if we think that there might be something we need to do to address it, you know, as part of their specially designed instruction or as part of their IEP or as part of their 504 plan? That it makes complete sense. I guess when I'm saying free days, what I'm saying is for those 10 days, that student can still be disciplined in the same manner as their non-disabled peers.
Right.
So even though you're doing other things, like maybe you're taking a closer look at the IEP or Section 504 plan, or you're looking at doing a functional behavior assessment or any of those things, that doesn't mean the student can't still be disciplined during that time period.
Right. So in getting to these 10 days, counting them is very important. We see a lot of mistakes and a lot of
It's amazing how hard it is to count to 10. I've got to be honest with you. It's ridiculous.
Is 10 really 10 here? So let's talk about what that looks like. So the first thing to point out is that it's not necessarily consecutive days.
Correct.
It's cumulative.
Correct. So, you know, that kid who gets suspended for 3 days and then 3 more days and then 3 more days after that. And then we got 3 more days. OK, now you're over.
Right. And who's keeping track of that? You need to make sure that somebody, the administrator, is imposing the discipline or the IEP
software.
Yeah. You know, most districts have some software where you can go on pretty easily and you can count, you know, down the screen, like how many days of removal. In my experience, though, part of the issue is making sure that all of the days that a student is actually out for discipline get put into the computer the right way. Because if the data doesn't get entered the right way, all the counting in the world isn't going to help you because what's on the screen isn't right.
Right.
So tell me a little bit more what you mean by that.
So let's say that a student is emergency removed, for example, like something happens and they're emergency removed for a day. If they were counted as present at the beginning of that school day because they were in school, sometimes they don't get counted that day that they're absent for the rest of the day, doesn't get counted at all as an emergency removal because nobody ever goes back and updates the attendance.
So like a partial day, like they might have missed half a day, and you need to count that half day.
Right. You know, so let's say that they came that morning, they were counted as present. At, you know, 10 in the morning, there was some huge fight and the building administrator said, this was such a big deal. We need to do an emergency removal. So the student is out for that half of a day. It's half of a day of disciplinary removal. And sometimes districts don't go back and literally update the attendance to account for that. And you need to, because if you don't, then you're not going to have your 10 days accurately.
But does that count as one full day or half a day?
Half a day, I usually say. You know, I don't know that there's really anything in the statute, to be honest with you, that talks about half days, but I tend to look at it as how long was the student actually out of class? Because if they were there for literally the first half of the day and we sent them home around the halfway point, I would just count it as a half. Other people might feel more conservatively about that than I do.
Right. And well, in practical terms, at least counting it as half, you know, if they're missing 20 half days, that's pretty substantial.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How about in-school suspensions? This seems to be an area that trips up a lot of districts.
I see that. I see a lot of in-school suspensions, and they're not counted.
Well, and sometimes they can be, and sometimes they shouldn't be. I mean,
it's so hard. And that's kind of why I'm sighing over this one, because, you know, some districts call them in-school suspension. Some call them in-school restriction. Some have really kitschy, cute names for them that make it sound like it's not discipline, even though it actually really is, right? Like, I'm going to go to the pride room, right?
Right.
when the pride room is really like, yeah, no, you messed up.
But the circumstances are really going to be what are important here in determining if you need to count those days.
Absolutely. Because, you know, if the student is simply in a room and they're not receiving any instruction, you know, specifically they're not receiving the specially designed instruction that's part of their IEP.
So, yes, they're still in the building.
Correct. But they're not
getting in their programming,
their IEP services or their programming. You know, some districts try to get around that. And I think it's workable to have an intervention specialist actually go into that in-school suspension room, whatever you call it, and provide those services. And I could make a good argument that that is not a day of removal because the student received all of their services. Right. But if they don't receive those, then yes, those days are going to count, even though the student is technically in the building.
Right. I've seen the student be in, say, the in-school suspension room for part of the day and then go maybe still to their resource room for their intervention services or something like that.
Or maybe to their related services. Like, let's say they have speech services. You know, they still go out to their speech services and that sort of thing. You know, but I guess the caveat with that I want to make sure people understand is if you're at a point where this is happening over and over and over again, there comes a point where you don't really pass the red face test, right, as to whether it's a removal or not, because putting the student in an in-school suspension room for 20 days and just having the intervention specialist like pop in to provide minutes of instruction,
it's a good point.
Not the same as being in class. So while there's some leeway there, you still want to be careful how you do that and how you count it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you're in front of a hearing officer and you say, oh, you know what? The mom says, oh, this is my child's 45th day of in-school suspension.
Well, and you can see in a I mean, 45 days of that certainly looks like a change of placement, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, I think people lose sight of that. They're like, oh, yay, I don't have to count those days. You're like, well, you know.
Right. So. Well, and again, that goes back to somebody knowing what they're counting and paying attention to even keeping track of those in-school days as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The one that always tends to trip people up is bus suspensions, because a bus suspension might count as a day of disciplinary removal if the student has transportation on their IEP as a related service and we kick them off the bus. Well, guess what? We have just said we're not providing them with one of their IEP services. Therefore, that would count as a day of disciplinary removal. I've never actually seen this, but I anticipate that it would still count as a day of removal, even if the student actually makes it to school that day. Because there was a service on their IEP that we didn't provide, it would certainly count as a day of removal if they didn't make it to school because they couldn't make it to school, you know. So we didn't suspend them from school, but we suspended them from the bus, but they had no way to get to their services.
So in all practical application, they were kept from their service and kept from school.
Exactly. And, you know, I think districts have gotten a lot smarter about this because, you know, in years gone by, we gave a lot more leeway to, say, bus drivers or the transportation department. You know, the bus garage was suspending people from the bus. And I think as districts have become more cognizant about these kinds of issues, a bus suspension has to be done, typically speaking, by the student's building administrator. So those folks are going to know, is this a student on an IEP? Is this a student who has transportation as a related service? And then what do I want to do that's maybe different, you know, a different kind of disciplinary outcome for the student that isn't going to count against us?
For that to happen, I think there needs to be two pieces to this. The transportation director or the bus driver needs to let the building principal know. They cannot just take these steps on their own.
Right.
And then the building principal has to have a method for red flagging these kids, has to have a way to, and we just talked about this, has to have a way of recognizing which kids have IEPs and for which students on those IEPs, transportation is a service that we should be providing.
Yeah, and I would even add a third prong to that in having the communication also with the IEP team, because when we dive into what the protections and steps are that have to take after these 10 days, that team is instrumental. So they need to be in the mix of communication and knowing what's going on with all this as well.
Right. You know, I think the other thing, you know, just kind of to bring this all back around and looking at, you know, some common mistakes, right, that people make, because we've talked about the bus a little bit, we've talked about the days. Sometimes people will ask me, and this always just makes me laugh, like, well, when do I get to hit, you know, the restart button on my 10 days, right? Because I get 10 more of those.
Oh, my gosh.
No. Exactly. See, Lisa knows the answer. There is no reset button on the 10 days. You only ever get 10 per school year. So, you know.
So it's not 10 for fighting,
right,
and 10 for being
disruptive.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Or 10 more for stealing something
exactly.
or whatever.
So 10 total in 10, a school year.
In a school year. Okay. So, and two more things with that. The first is, if a student moves into your school district and their previous school district has used all of those 10
mm-hmm.
days, guess what? There's no reset button on that either. You're just kind of stuck,
with the
10 days being gone.
So you do need to look at their attendance and
right.
the records to know where you stand on that as well.
Right. That's exactly right. You know, and then the other thing that I always try to tell building administrators about the 10 days and how that works, there are things that you can do to discipline a student that don't necessarily need to involve removal from school.
That's an excellent point.
And don't waste your 10 days at the very beginning of the school year. You know, think about, how am I going to dole these out over a period of time so I don't immediately land myself in a place where all of the IDEA and Section 504 discipline protections kick in, if I can do other things. You know, so other things might be after-school detentions. They might be community service. They might be Saturday schools if your district does something like that. There are
right.
lots of other things you can do. Don't just blow through your 10 days because you're only hurting yourself.
Right.
This is what I always say. Don't kill a fly with a hammer on a glass table.
I love it.
Yeah.
I'm going to start using that. I really like that.
All right. So we have these 10 days, and then we kick in on the 11th day with some more protections, and we will dive into those in our next episode. But basically, the big word you're going to be hearing is the manifestation determination review.
We're going to talk about what that meeting looks like. We're going to talk about who needs to be there. Please tune in for that. Please, please listen to our podcast episodes about manifestation determination. And I really hope, we all really hope that you enjoyed this episode.
And thank you for joining us, Christina.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Please shoot us an email, everybody. Just shoot us an email. Tell us what you think. Rate us on iTunes. The algorithm helps us move up. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time.
The content of this podcast is provided for general information purposes only. The podcast is not legal advice, does not create an attorney-client relationship, and should not be relied upon in making legal decisions. Actions on legal matters should be taken only upon advice of legal counsel. Walter Haverfield does not guarantee the accuracy of information contained in this podcast.